Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites Better Homes and Gardens and Smithsonian Magazine. Question number one, in which year were fireworks first used to celebrate the 4th of July in the USA? Was that A, 1777, B, 1865, C, 1900, or D, 1946? First fireworks celebration of 4th of July. Which year was that? And question number two, what is the name of the national anthem of the United States of America? Is that A, the Star-Spangled Banner? Is it B, America the Beautiful? Is it C, the Stars and Stripes Forever? Or is it D, God Bless America? Which is the national anthem? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July the 2nd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1895, that the song America the Beautiful was first published. America the Beautiful, 1895, today. And it was 41 years ago today, 1980, that the Beach Boys gave a free outdoor performance to an estimated 500,000 people in Washington, D.C. Beach Boys 4th of July concert before an audience of 500,000 attendees, 1980 today. Mahler's Eighth Symphony, Finale, introduces our classical music news. It's entitled, Lately We've Read, The Eighth, Mahler and the World in 1910. This book is written by Stephen Johnson, and it's reviewed in Quarter Notes by R.C. Speck in WCPE's June through August 2021 issue. Sometimes, though through the expanse of time, classical music can appear like a placid ocean. But underneath, there's always tremendous activity. Stephen Johnson, in his book, The Eighth, Mahler and the World in 1910, shows us how active things were with Gustav Mahler while composing and conducting his titanic choral Eighth Symphony. Johnson approaches his subject from several angles. He discusses the volcanic energy which Mahler applied to his work. His recently diagnosed heart lesion was weighing heavily upon him, but he refused to let health conditions hamper his output. Back then, he was known more as a conductor than a composer, so in a sense, he had something to prove with every new work. His Eighth Symphony, however, posed unique challenges simply because of its size. Known as the Symphony of a Thousand, this work called for hundreds of singers, full orchestra, and is one of the largest scale works in the classical repertoire. Johnson uses the memoirs of Mahler's famous wife Alma for a source, and so much of this history has filtered through her perspective. Her life as a work widow to a man so career-obsessed was lonely and difficult, and through her letters we learn about her angst when having to choose between her husband and her lover and future husband, Walter Gropius. The music itself gets a detailed analysis, so do Mahler's inspirations, musical, literary, and philosophical. Beethoven's choral Ninth Symphony, of course, looms large, as does Wagner. Mahler also appropriates text from Goethe's Faust and Latin hymns from the Middle Ages. As an avid reader, Mahler was greatly influenced by the ideas of Nietzsche and Schiller. Johnson next tackles the thorny issue of identity when analyzing Mahler's famous assertions that he was part Bohemian, Austrian, German, and Jewish, and an intruder everywhere. Johnson demonstrates aspects of each of these identities as they appear in the Eighth. Article skips down, ends with this. As for Mahler's intruder identity, Part 2 expresses his profound loneliness by lamenting how the wanderer is a stranger everywhere. In recounting the tragedy of how Gustav Mahler died before his time, Stephen Johnson has helped endure and ensure that this great composer will never wander from our memory. And in music research and pandemic adjustment news, we have this article entitled Vaccine Warriors. Dr. Todd Wolwin and Chad Herman take on anti-vax falsehoods with a healthy dose of science and humor. This is written by Morgan Smith, published in Parade magazine, June 14, 2021. Even before the COVID-19 shot was available, Dr. Todd Wolwin was willing to do almost anything to support the science of vaccinations. He's donned a crown and robe for a Hamilton-inspired tune about the flu shot, Flu Be Back, starred in a series of dance-off videos in support of children's health, and dressed up as Vaxman for one of his weekly Facebook Live Q&A sessions. I started taking singing lessons over a year ago, says Wolwin, a pediatrician in Pittsburgh with 26 years of experience. I want people to have accurate information about vaccines, and if singing and dancing helps it get out there, I'm thrilled. Recently, Wolwin upped his game, testing out his crooning skills in a TikTok video he posted in March for his 24,000 followers as he performs a sea chanty about COVID. Vaccinate sooner than soon. Work to get us all immune. My wife would argue about my dancing ability, but if we can answer questions in a fun format, I don't mind, says Wolwin, 55. Wolwin and Chad Herman, 52, the communications director at Kids Plus Pediatrics, where Wolwin is CEO, have long tapped social media to fight vaccine disinformation, and they've seen results at their family practice where 71% of their 13-year-old patients have received the HPV vaccine, compared with only 15.8% nationally. In 2018, the pair launched Shots Heard Round the World, a nonprofit aimed at creating educational content about vaccines and responding to anti-vax onslaughts online. We come to the aid of any vaccine advocate who is attacked, said Herman. We couldn't have imagined how important this work would become in 2020. Wolwin is happy to play his part for laughs, but the message is deadly serious, he says. My oath as a doctor is to do no harm. vaccine disinformation is putting kids' lives in harm's way.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked off to look for America.
Simon and Garfunkel's America introduces our rock, R&B, country, and folk music news. It's an article titled The Songs of America, written by Jim Farber on the 25th of June, 2021 in Parade magazine. In honor of Independence Day, Parade celebrates the music that helps shape, define, and express the American experience from sea to shining sea. What makes a great American song? No one piece of music can define a land this large and varied. Yet certain themes and emotions keep coming up. Individuality, freedom, loyalty, awe. There are also odes that express a healthy sense of dissent. Music has been both a mirror and a maker of America, said historian John Meacham, who, with country superstar Tim McGraw, wrote the book Songs of America, Patriotism, Protest, and the Music That Made a Nation. Songs often capture the competing impulses of given eras. Irving Berlin to Woody Guthrie and Bruce Springsteen reflect the diversity and multiplicity of the American experience. Here are some of the best songs that do just that, edited down here for time considerations. America by Simon and Garfunkel, the song playing in the background now. A road trip Paul Simon took with his girlfriend inspired one of the nation's greatest songs of searching. This 1965 song follows two young lovers on a journey that serves as a metaphor for finding both themselves and the character of the country. As it turns out, they are hardly alone on their sojourn. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they discover they've all come to look for America. Referencing an entire generation. The lyrics Simon wrote don't rhyme, but poetry is found instead in the breathtaking beauty of the music. To capture the synchronicity of the characters, Simon and Garfunkel sang in unison because, at that moment, we have an identical soul and come from identical place. Then there's the song Rock in the USA by John Mellencamp. While this 1965 song lyrics name-check a host of musical guests, Mellencamp isn't simply lionizing them for their groovy greatness. He's saluting them as agents of change. They filled our heads full of dreams by turning our world upside down. Their music represented an era in which AM radio drew no distinction between race or genre. In a most democratic American move, any song that rocked was played, regardless of who sang it. And then there's America the Beautiful by Ray Charles. Everyone in America has sung some version of this stirring ode to the beauty of the nation's land, originally written as a poem in the late 1800s. Countless artists have recorded it too, but the soulfulness of Ray Charles's 1972 version gave it an enduring significance. Filmmaker Ken Burns used Charles's rendition to highlight the emotional moment in his Vietnam War documentary, When American POWs Are Returned Home. Charles also performed it just weeks after the 9/11 terrorist attack, when he played a piano placed on New York Yankees home plate in Game 2 of the 2001 World Series as soldiers and first responders unrolled a flag that covered the entire outfield. And how about Born in the USA, Bruce Springsteen? Few songs have been misrepresented more often than this 1984 smash. Though the lyrics capture the voice of a bitter and disillusioned Vietnam vet, The defiance of the music has caused many politicians like Ronald Reagan, Bob Dole, Pat Buchanan, and Donald Trump to misinterpret it as a proud anthem of patriotism, none of which pleased the boss. "My music has become a football," he told NPR in 2005. And then there's "This Land Is Your Land," Woody Guthrie. One of America's most famous folk songs was inspired by another hugely popular ballad about the country, Kate Smith's version of Irving Berlin's "God Bless America," because Guthrie was so irritated by its rah-rah message. In 1940, he wrote this counter version, released on record in 1951, with lyrics that stressed that the country was made and owned by everyday citizens. It also protested against income inequality and the widespread suffering of the Great Depression. The tune he chose was inspired by the Carter family's "When the World's on Fire." And then there's "California Dreamin'," the Mamas and the Papas. Few songs evoke the warmth and freedom of America's expansionist dream with more beauty and charm than this 1965 hit. From its cascading harmonies and rich melody to its pining lyric, it serenades the mythic promise of something bigger, brighter, and better on the West Coast. In fact, a cold New York City winter inspired band member John Phillips to write the song. But in recording it, vocalist Cass Elliott misread a key part of the lyrics, singing, "Got down on my knees and I began to pray," instead of, "I pretend to pray. Either way, the music captured the whole nation's dream of endless summer. And how about "Living in America" by James Brown? America couldn't ask for a funkier anthem than James Brown's hard-charging 1985 hit. Featured on the soundtrack to the film Rocky IV, the song's lyrics honor the coast-to-coast superhighways that represent the nation's breadth and openness, as well as an opportunity for a Philly palooka to become a worldwide boxing superstar. Along the way, Brown mentions no fewer than 9 U.S. cities, declaring that somewhere on the way you might find out who you are. The connection between location and identity runs deep. And then there's "Rockin' in the Free World" by Neil Young. One of Young's hardest rocking songs is also one of his hardest hitting. While the chorus salutes the free world of the West, the verses trash the administration of President George H.W. Bush. "We got 1,000 points of light for the homeless man," goes one lyric, twisting a favored phrase used by Bush. "We got a kinder, gentler machine gun hand." Frank Sam Pedro, the guitarist in Young's band, told Mojo magazine he came up with the 1989 song's title phrase after a show the group planned for Russia got canceled. "I guess we're going to have to keep rocking in the free world," he said. Young thought the phrase would make a great song title. The result? Young's most topical protest song since "Ohio," his blistering 1970 reaction to the Kent State massacre. Then there's "Grand Funk Railroad's We're an American Band." Don Brewer, now 72, tells Parade he wrote Grand Funk's first number one single in utter desperation. "Our former manager ripped us off and we were broke," said the band's singing drummer. "We needed a hit." For lyrical inspiration, he turned to what his made so famous to begin with. Their ability to come to your own town and help you party it down. As in the 1973 song's lyric, the band really did play poker with blues man Freddie King. Their opening act on a 1972 tour, and Sweet Sweet Connie was a famous groupie. Brewer credits the song's success to its joyous chorus and its driving cowbell intro. The band's frontman and lead singer, Mark Farner, told him at the time, "All hit songs have a cowbell." Brewer recalls, he was right. It just wouldn't be the same without it. And last but not least, here's "America" by Neil Diamond. One of Diamond's most personal songs resonated across our nation. Though its lyrics honor the bravery and contribution of immigrants everywhere, its inspiration comes from Diamond's own family. The 80-year-old artist tells Parade it's a story of his grandparents coming to America. My grandmother, Booby Molly, came in the steerage section of a Holland America ship when she was 12. She was escaping Jewish oppression in Russia. My other grandparents had similar stories coming to America from Italy and Poland. Small wonder he calls the 1980 song a musical expression of being free. And in local music news, we have this article written by Drew Jackson, published in the News and Observer on the 22nd of June, 2021, entitled, J. Cole's Dreamville Festival Will Return to Raleigh Next Year After a Two-Year Hiatus. The Hard Luck Dreamville Festival will return next year in the latest sign that life is getting back to normal post-pandemic. North Carolina rapper J. Cole announced on Twitter on Tuesday that his Dreamville Festival will be held in Raleigh in April 2022. When the inaugural Dreamville Fest finally made it to the stages in Dix Park in April 2019, the festival was widely praised by concertgoers and city officials as a hit for Raleigh, completely selling out its 40,000 tickets before the event. Though specific dates for Dreamville 2022 haven't been announced, fans can sign up for announcements online. Go to dreamville.com for more information and tickets. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, as noted on the May 16, 2021 article in Parade Magazine by Marin Lyles, titled, These July 4th Trivia Questions with Answers Will Reveal Just How Much You Remember from History Class. Are you willing to sign your Jan Hancock in the history books of Independence Day knowledge? It's time to powder your wig and button your peacoat, because these 4th of July trivia questions are sure to send off fireworks in your brain. From trivia on July 4th history and Independence Day trivia. Before you get started, go ahead and pour yourself a cup of tea, after you fish it out of the harbor, of course. Then set down your musket, kick off your boots, and pull out your quill and scroll to get started. The answer to our first question, in which year were fireworks first used to celebrate the 4th of July? Was it A, 1777, B, 1865, C, 1900, or D, 1946? Correct answer. Answer A, 1777. The 4th of July celebrates the date on which the Declaration of Independence was adopted by the Continental Congress in 1776. As noted in a 4/20/21 Better Homes and Garden article by Emily Van Schmoos, fireworks are the most iconic symbol of the 4th of July. After all, no Independence Day celebration is complete without a few red, white, and blue explosions in the sky at the end of the night. But have you ever wondered why we celebrate the holiday with colorful explosives? We did some digging. Turns out fireworks were used to celebrate the very first anniversary of the holiday back in 1777. Ever since, Americans have proudly shot fireworks into the night every 4th of July. And the answer to our second question, what is the name of the national anthem of the United States of America? Is it A, Star Spangled Banner, B, America the Beautiful, C, the Stars and Stripes Forever, or D, God Bless America? Correct answer? Answer A, Star Spangled Banner. As noted in the 3/1/2007 Smithsonian Magazine article by Kate Linberry, on a rainy September 13, 1814, British warships sent a downpour of shells and rockets onto Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor, relentlessly pounding the American fort for 25 hours. The bombardment, known as the Battle of Baltimore, came only weeks after the British had attacked Washington, D.C., burning the Capitol, the Treasury, and the President's House. It was another chapter in the ongoing War of 1812. Francis Scott Key watched on September 13 as the barrage of Fort McHenry began 8 miles away. It seemed as though Mother Earth had opened and was vomiting shot and shell in a sheet of fire and brimstone, Key wrote later. But when darkness arrived, Key saw only red erupting in the night sky. Given the scale of the attack, he was certain the British would win. The hours passed slowly, but in the clearing smoke of the dawn's early light, on September 14, he saw the American flag, not the British Union Jack, flying over the fort, announcing an American victory. Key put his thoughts on paper while still on board ship, setting his words to the tune of a popular English song. Key's poem, now called Star Spangled Banner, appeared in print across the country, immortalizing his words. The Star Spangled Banner resonates with people in different ways for different reasons, said Kathleen Kendrick, curator of the Star Spangled Banner Preservation Project. It's exciting to realize that you're looking at the very same flag that Francis Scott Key saw on that September morning in 1814. But the Star Spangled Banner is more than an artifact. It's also a national symbol. It evokes powerful emotions and ideas about what it means to be an American. So let's close out today's program with the national anthem and some fireworks, of course. Run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. And happy 4th of July.